Welcome to Slug's bi-weekly Slug Soundwaves podcast. Here, in our print mag and on slugmag.com, enjoy our curated content that highlights the best of Utah's alternative and underrepresented music, arts, events, and community subcultures. If Slug has benefited you or someone you love, consider contributing to sustain our existence. Head to slugmag.com/donate to join our community of donors.
KRCL was founded in 1979 to bring a more diverse voice to Salt Lake City and surrounding areas. KRCL is community funded and supported, which allows diverse commercial free programming that varies from indie to hip hop, blues to bluegrass, metal, punk, indigenous, and bilingual programs. Every weekday at 6 p.m., KRCL's Radioactive brings you grassroots activism and civic engagement with punk rock farming and live local music on Fridays. Tune in to KRCL at 90.9 FM. Stream at krcl.org or download the app on the App Store.
Shh. Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves. My name is Hallie Jean. I go by Hal often. And my projects include Hoofless is my main musical project. Riff Ticker is my strange side project, and I also play in a number of local groups such as Gurgle and formerly local Sculpture Club. And then finally, I have a small side concert production company called Haifa Productions. My biggest collaborator in Salt Lake City is David Payne, who I've known since I was a small child, and he has had a huge influence on how I write and perform and interact with music as a whole. I like to describe my music creation process as attempting to combine grandiosity and fragility at once. And so a lot of the music I make is meant to feel very, very large and somehow very fragile. Currently, my instrument of choice is the cello, but I am very prone to getting distracted, especially by instruments. I find them all to be the practice of learning a new instrument is by itself part of my music creation process also. So recently I've picked up the flute, but I also play the mandolin and the drums and the piano and the saw, and recently wine glasses with a bow through a pedal board. So also instrument creation is informative on my songwriting processes as well. I'm attracted to the exploration of sound. I like to feel surprised in general with any aspect of my life. When I'm reading a book, I like to feel surprised. Watching a movie, I like to feel surprised. When I'm interacting with people, I like to feel surprised. And so I seek that out while I'm listening and creating music. And part of that maybe is setting up scenarios that I will not have control over, like putting contact mics on 13 wine glasses and running them all through a mixer and then through a pedal board and then seeing what happens. It doesn't always produce the most beautiful sound, but sometimes it does. My very first show I ever did, I was, I think, 12 or 13, and I did an acoustic singer-songwriter set at Kilby Court, and it was the most humiliating. I was actually, after that performance, I decided I would never perform alone ever again, that I needed to collaborate with other people. I absolutely prefer to collaborate with people. It's the element of surprise. It's hard to surprise myself. You can't, you know, if you tell yourself a joke, you're probably not going to laugh. But if a friend tells you a joke, you know, it's a collaborative process. And so I prefer that in music making as well. I have since just barely become brave enough to be able to do solo performances again. And still, it's mortifying. I get crippling stage fright before every show, even with a band, which is kind of interesting that I've been performing for this long and still have to, like, talk myself down usually right before a set. It's much easier if there are other people involved. You can do it collectively. You can collectively panic and then collectively perform and then collectively celebrate. It depends on the project. With Hoofless, for instance, I actually write out everyone's parts. It's far more orchestrated, with the intention that here's the part that I've given to you. You have full permission to adjust, change, or surprise me as you see fit, depending on the live performance or the recording, however we're approaching it. And then Riff Ticker is entirely, it's pretty experimental improvisation, with prompts typically. So sometimes recently I've been exploring with visual scores where I draw out the score with squiggly lines or shapes and the intensity and theory of, well, they're allowed to interpret the score however they please, but given a basic visual prompt to follow has led to some very surprising outcomes. So I've been really happy with that. And improvisation is interesting because, yeah, it's you're not totally sure what's going to happen. And high risk, high reward. Sometimes the outcomes are things you never would have thought would have come out of you or the other person and would not have under regular circumstances. If I were to say, you know, here's the riff or here's the sheet music, here's your piece. I'm never gonna unlock these like secret moments in improv that kind of seem to exist only in live improv scenarios. I took a songwriting class from Brian Eno recently, and he described pieces of music as landscapes. And when you don't have a figure in a landscape, you're focused on the shapes of the hills or the color schemes or negative space. And then the second you put a figure in a landscape, you now have a narrative around a main character. You have a point of focus that you as a human connect to. And I actually think that every instrument does that in some capacity. When you whip out a guitar, the guitar has all of this baggage, tonally, socially, you know, culturally. And so choosing your instruments, I think, offers you a cast in the story, and you get to choose that. You get to curate that, orchestrate that the way you want. So I put down the guitar, back to your question, because I didn't like the narrative the guitar inherently brings along with it, especially the singer-songwriter style of music. I found, because what I'm driven towards is storytelling. These big pieces I write for Hoofless are long and meant to be kind of cinematic and have a narrative quality. But I didn't want them to feel like a story with someone, like a songwriting story, you know, someone with a guitar telling you a story. I want it to feel, again, like large and encompassing and like you could kind of swim in it a little bit. So I started listening to the band Godspeed You Black Emperor when I was, again, like 13 or 14. And was just obsessed, like could listen to that day in, day out, probably did weird things to my brain, who knows. And I became really interested in long format narrative compositions. I helped too that I was hanging out with a lot of friends who were in classical music, so I could ask them to play along with me. For cello, I'm self-taught also, so a lot of my techniques are bad and my my bowing's probably not ergonomic, and but approaching songwriting through instruments like the cello, which I felt like gave me a lot of opportunities to explore an instrument that I wasn't familiar with and try to reach sonic and narrative goals in like a roundabout and not a traditional way, not with a guitar and making lyrics about whatever the narrative was. Hoofless was my first project that I seriously, because I'd been writing music with David Payne. David Payne started teaching me songwriting when I was a kid, and a lot of it, I think I was trying to follow to like learn the formats of how songs are written, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, you know, so on and so forth. And the more I would do that, the more I was compelled to deviate from that, and the more David Payne encouraged me to do so. I think Hoofless started in 2010. So it's been around for a long time, and it's gone through lots and lots of iterations. The core of Hoofless is just me exploring songwriting in a large format compositional arrangements and attempting to bring in collaborators who, like I said, when you choose your instrument, it brings a certain connotation, a certain vibe. It brings a type of character to your cast. So I try to find folk who are playing instruments in a certain kind of way that I think will lend itself well to the narrative that I'm attempting to create. Here's the tale of Haifa. As a musician, as a female presenting musician, a lot of my experiences going to shows has been people being rude to me because I don't know how to do sound stuff. For a long time, I just show up and play, which is what most musicians are doing. You show up and you play your goddamn songs, you know? And this thing kept happening where I kept bringing, I mean, the nature of the stuff that I'm bringing is weird sometimes, you know, like cellos have bad feedback problems when you put them in front of a huge amp, and wine glasses, are probably going to have some feedback issues. You know, I just kept bringing things that were making sound engineers angry with me. And so, I decided that I was going to become a sound engineer, and I did that. And I started working around town at clubs, running sound, and luckily, I have an older brother, Wes, who works at Archive Recordings, who was an excellent resource whenever I'd have questions. He'd just help me out. COVID hit, and I had no shows now to run sound for. And so I started just compulsively collecting audio equipment. And I already had tons of audio equipment, but I was like, okay, I want big speakers. I want monitors. I want like high-quality stuff that I could take places and do shows. And so I started to do that and my goal with Haifa Productions is that I wanted to be a production company where when people had shows and events, they'd hire me to come run sound, you know, and lights. And it was totally an accident where I just started booking everything. Instead of people hiring me, I just kept getting excited about shows and kept putting on shows. And so I take this, I call it the Haifa rig. I'd load up the Haifa rig into my Subaru, and it's like every crack is filled with some piece of Haifa rig equipment. And I would roll up to these spots that would so generously let me turn their non-venue spaces into a venue for a night. So Old Cuss Cafe would let me do it. Church and State had started letting me do it. There was a time when I was rolling up to boxing gyms, grocery stores, like literally anywhere where I looked at it and I thought, that'd be sick to have a show there. And I'd walk up and have this pitch about, you know, local music and how important it is. And would you like to collaborate with me as two, you know, independent local business people? And most of the time people would say no. Like I'd ask 100 people in a week and one of them would say, maybe let's chat about it. So Haifa Productions became also me as an independent promoter. And I began, you know, building relationships locally with bands and then later with bands touring from out of town, and now working with artists that I never thought I would be able to work with. So it's wild. And I have like staff. I've like hire people now. It's really gotten blown out. I don't know how this happened. It was not my plan for it to become what it is now, but I'm really happy with it. And I think that it occurred organically and is doing good things for me and good things for my friends and good thing for artists. And so I'm just going to keep letting the rock roll. Thank you for listening to me blab about my projects. What you're about to hear is a piece that I am currently working on. And it's, when I say currently, it's July of 2025. A demo for a Hoofless song that I have yet to release. Enjoy. You can find Hoofless Music on Bandcamp, as well as Riff Ticker Music on Bandcamp. Hoofless has an Instagram, so does Hypha Productions. We have a website, hyphaproductions.com, where all of my events are listed. And you can come see my project Riff Ticker. The next time I'm performing is at Far Out Fest at Far Out Cassette Club's backyard. It's their 5th annual year, so that'll be the next time that Riff Ticker is performing. That Riff Ticker set is going to be a sound set where I am doing teppanyaki. I'm going to cook live with microphones on everything. It'll be a highly percussive set where I flip shrimp into my collaborators' mouths as they adjust my effects. So please don't miss that. It'll be a legendary performance. And if you're hungry, I will attempt to toss food into your mouth. If you enjoyed this episode of Slug Soundwaves, please take 60 seconds to rate and review us on Apple Podcast.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Nate McQuivy, coordinated by William Hughes, and promoted by the Slug Magazine editorial staff. Be sure to check out this month's issue of Slug. You can find a copy any place cool or at slugmag.com.
Did you enjoy this episode of Slug Soundwaves? You and the local community can continue to enjoy Slug Mag's content for free, but please consider making a one-time or ongoing contribution. Each contribution, no matter the amount, helps support Slug's creation of thoughtful media coverage on SLC's music, arts, events, and community subcultures. Head over to slugmag.com/donate to make your contribution today.